Charlie.
Good evening, folks. Welcome. Welcome to your local Girl Scout cookie franchise location. Sorry. Welcome to the March 20th, 2018 Tompkins County Legislature meeting. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members, please.
Ms. Kellis? Here. Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
I am present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey has asked to be excused. Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Old habits die hard, Kathy. We have two slips from members of the public here, Kenneth Finkelstein and then Bonnie Dawson. Rules for speaking under privilege of the floor. I agree by signing this. I agree to a three-minute time limit, and the clock is up on the wall. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and I'm asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. And just remind folks to turn off your cell phones and devices. Kenneth, hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak. I am Ken Finkelstein. I am Vice President of Friendship Donation Network, or FDN. And you're going to be voting, I think, on a resolution later today that includes the name Friendship Donation Network. It's a resolution in support of the New York State proposed legislation to increase food rescue and recycling. And I just wanted to tell you a few things and to encourage you to please vote positively to pass this resolution. Friendship Donation Network knows a lot about this kind of work because we've been doing it for 30 years. We have about 100 volunteers in Tompkins County, plus one half-time coordinator, paid coordinator, and we rescue about 1,000 pounds of food a day and help feed about 2,000 families each week. We don't feed them completely ourselves, but we help them put food on the table. We partner with more than two dozen local companies, including Wegmans, the colleges, and Farmers Market, and many other stores in town who are very generously our food donors. And we organize about 17 neighborhood food hubs around the county, which means that people who have too many zucchinis have a place to drop off their lovingly grown zucchinis in that time of year. And we also were named Nonprofit of the Year for 2018 by the Chamber of Commerce this year. And our mission is very much in line with this resolution, and we want you to know that we support it, and we hope that you will support it. I also want to mention that we've gotten a lot of sage wisdom and collaboration with Tompkins County, Tompkins County Recycling and Materials Management Division, and especially with Barb Engstrom, and I want to thank her very much for everything that she's helped us with. So that's my message. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Kenneth, and thank you for your work. Bonnie Dawson.
Hi, I'm Bonnie Dawson, and I'm homeless here in Tompkins County. A lot of new people on the board that I don't recognize. I used to work at the Biggs A building, the sick building that was torn down by the county, and we were never compensated anything for our injuries or our 100% permanent disabilities that we were all awarded by Social Security after we came out of that sick building. Life has been a real struggle for the last, 25-plus years, it seems like. And I am now homeless because a Supreme Court justice here in Tompkins County decided to give an ex-boyfriend my home after he put his name on a mortgage after my dad died, and I couldn't get a mortgage in my own name because my disability is only $849 a month. So I lost my house, and I lost a lot. Plessy was able to get a $56,000 judgment against me besides getting my $95,000 house. So I'm homeless. Tompkins County is paying to keep me in motels. I have chemical sensitivity, environmental illness, fibro, IBS, upper airway, permanent upper airway damage. Raynaud syndrome or disease, toxic encephalopathy, just the list goes on, and more things have been added to the list since I've been homeless for this last couple of months. Whenever I come in contact with stuff, I get really sick, and I can't find an apartment that accommodates my illness so that I'm not sick and at the ER all the time. In even being at the Hilton, which you would think would be awesome because it's one of the better hotels and it's a very expensive, still sick there. And I did have my air purifier. I have an $800 medical air cleaner, which got broke with this last move. I have to move like every week. With this last move, it got broke, so it's no longer functioning. But even with that, I'm at the Ithaca Hilton. I was pretty sick. I just spent 4 days straight in bed down in Vestal at that Vestal Homewood Suites after moving into there, and it's just really bad. I'll tell you, this is the God's honest truth. I need a house. And I need somebody to help me get a house. I don't have Section 8. I don't have anything. I don't have parents or family. And the only other solution I see to this whole thing, because the last time I was homeless was for like 6 months, and I was at the Ramada in Cortland at that time, the only other solution I see is if I could be an organ donator and just give my organs to somebody and they put me out for life, because I can't be sick like this all the time and have nothing to look forward to in my future, and it's not good. And I'm sorry I went over the 3 minutes. But thank you for paying for the hotels for me.
Thank you, Ms. Dawson. Did I see Duxon over there on the corner? Is there? Yeah, you're hiding. So, municipal official, first let me say, any other member of the public? I don't. Anybody else? Okay, thank you. Hi, Duxon. Thanks for coming.
Hello. That's good. Thank you. I think most of the big things have been covered in the media, like the nines and inclusionary zoning and put overlay, so I'll just mention a couple interesting things. One is, like, we've kind of kicked off our LED streetlight effort in earnest, and there's a meeting with a consultant that other municipalities could participate in to learn more about how that process works. The city will be the lead on that. And I'm excited for the cost savings and the improved maintenance we should see from that. And IPD is starting implicit bias training soon, in a couple of weeks, which a lot of us in the city are excited about. That was one other thing. That's it, really. There's a lot going on, obviously, but like I said, the media has covered most of it. Green Street redevelopment, we got one response to the RFP, so there was a meeting about that. But I won't go into details unless there's something you need to know or haven't picked up in the media.
Thank you, Duxon. Any questions? Well, you know what? Some of us don't read all your coverage. So I would be very interested in a couple sentences on the Green Street Project and the inclusionary zoning, if you don't mind.
Sure. So the one proposal from Jeff Rimland and crew, he was on the team that did the Marriott, is 400 units, mostly market rate, but 10%, they're proposing 10% affordable or below market rate at least. They're used to doing this because they had a big project in Chicago, for example, where it's a requirement, 10%. 450 parking spaces. One interesting note about that is that they're planning the parking area to be high-ceilinged and to use hydraulic lifts like you see in New York City to do some of the parking so that the space can be converted to another use, say residences, if and when the amount of cars that the city has to support drops a lot.
Well, that's an optimistic idea.
Deborah accused City Council of not caring about parking, which is an accurate description for me. It's not that I don't care, but I'm not going to get into that. two towers of 12 stories each, of, like I said, 404 units, 25,000 square feet of conference space. I think those are the main highlights. There are two affordable housing requirement proposals on the table. One is tied to the expansion of CTAP to include the waterfront area, which has been prohibitively expensive to develop in. The one project that is underway is facing difficulty. And so expanding CTAP to that area is being proposed along with a 10% affordable housing requirement. So it's expansion and an extension of the 10-year abatement to a 20-year abatement, with the requirement that 10% of the units are affordable. But we're also looking at a citywide 10% affordable housing requirement for the non-CTAP area, gives the developer the option to pay into an affordable housing fund, such as perhaps the Community Housing Development Fund that we all contribute to. So very early discussions at the Planning and Economic Development Committee meeting, so nothing really concrete yet.
So if the zoning is changed so that any developers have to do 10% affordable housing, is there any carrot to that? Is there any benefit they get, or is it just...
No, so that is very clearly the stick approach. So it's units or funding.
Or funding through the IDA if it's
CTAP. It's a contribution to some kind of housing fund.
Okay. Right. All right. Deborah?
First of all, I want you to acknowledge that I did apologize when I accused you of not hearing about parking.
For me, it was 100% correct.
I just want to clarify something. So Mr. Rimland owns the Marriott?
He is involved in the Marriott project. I don't know if he owns it, but he owns... what's that building that sits underneath it?
He's an investor.
Yeah.
He owns the Rimland building.
Yes.
I know that. Yeah. I just didn't know he had an ownership interest in the hotel also. That's interesting.
Right. I can't remember if it's the land or... I mean, he developed it. He brought the hoteliers in. So, Anna?
So I didn't hear extensive discussion about the citywide requirement for the 10%. We were at that meeting. If it was discussed, I missed the details. And the one question that I would have is there discussion of a cutoff on size where below a certain amount that they aren't required, or would it be all development that is a commercial development of all sizes?
I don't remember in the specific one that was, in fact, for the citywide one, I think it was a one-liner. So I don't believe that there has been a ton of discussion. So that's going to be a factor. I mean, inclusionary zoning, it wasn't called inclusionary zoning in this proposal, but inclusionary zoning has a lot of facets to it, a lot of options we can pursue, and there are starting to be some case studies that we can look at, So New Paltz and White Plains have it in the state of New York. Portland, Oregon recently enacted one that you could argue stopped the development precipitously. So there are a lot of things that we want to study and try to avoid, but super early discussion. I don't think there has been much discussion.
I mean, usually there's some kind of give and take. For example, as you said, the CTAP benefits, or, for example, the city, you know, withdrawing or deferring the fees that a developer has to put in or whatever. I mean, so, you know, we do, boy, it's complicated, we know, and I'll talk later about our housing committee conversation about this. And so we really appreciate that you're wrestling with it, as we are.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Any other questions for Doug?
Yeah.
Henry?
I have a question. Are your boards currently filled?
So
the commissions
are filled. Not every other non-commission board is filled. But yes, thanks for reminding me. So the four new commissions are now filled and with chairs assigned and will begin meeting next month.
Okay. Thanks very much, Doug.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Legislative privilege of the floor. Shauna.
A brave and heroic constituent of District 11 passed away March 17, 2018. Lieutenant Colin Hayward Tolan returned to the Cosmos as he was surrounded by his loving family in Memphis, Tennessee at St. Jude's Hospital. If you've lived in our county over the past 8 years, I'm sure you've been to a birthday party, celebration, or invited to the Hayward Tolan House for an adult beverage when your children were outside trick-or-treating. To say the least, this family breeds love. 10-year-old Lieutenant Colin was like no other. At 9 years old, Colin joined the ranks of the Ithaca Police Department. Colin attended trainings, press meetings, and worked closely with Chief Barber and Tyler. He took the job very seriously and, with his words, made us all think twice. For Colin's birthday, many of us gathered in the community on a hot summer day at Stewart Park to celebrate the life of this amazing boy. There were stations set up to celebrate every festive time of year. I just so happened to be stationed at the Christmas area and dressed as Santa Claus for the event. When Colin sat in my lap, I couldn't tell if he was scared or actually trying to figure out why in the hell I would be costumed in a poorly fitted Santa outfit on a 95-degree day. Colin, thank you for the light that we all need. Your words, strength, and wit have made you a true hero in our community.
Thank you very much, Shauna. Without objection, if we can have a moment of silence for Colin. Thank you. Anyone else? Mike.
The previous 4 years, at the beginning of each meeting, I always ask everybody to silence their electronic devices. And what I'd like to do is remind us about our rules of the legislature that were adopted in 2010. Under Rule 5, the order and decorum, it reads, electronic devices should be silenced during meetings. If a legislator must receive or make a cell phone call during a meeting, he or she is expected to briefly leave the meeting to do so. Legislators are expected to remain engaged with the topics under discussion and should avoid activities that would divert their attention or are distracting to others. So I hope that when we're here, lots of us have electronic devices. Sometimes you're looking electronically at the agenda. There's nothing wrong with that. But we know that texting goes on. Texting goes on at home, text to people at home or people in the community. Texting goes on between members of the legislature. There is no good way to multitask and listen to the items either from the public or from each other, and to listen to the debate if your mind is half distracted with another task. So I would hope that we would keep this in mind, that it is our rule to pay attention, and we owe that to the people we represent.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? Amanda.
I would like to just quickly say that on Saturday, this will be my last announcement about this event because it will be over, the March for Our Lives Ithaca rally is happening at 2 o'clock on the Commons. Prior to that, some students from Cornell have organized a march. I believe they're meeting in the Arts Quad at 12:30, and you can march down the hill with them to the Commons, where our rally will be starting at 2 with the lovely and talented Leslyn McBean Claiborne as our MC, and many students speaking and playing music, some adult members of the public. So I encourage you all to come. We're also going to be having at least a dozen tables from organizations who oppose gun violence and want to protect our kids and work with kids. And so you can come and talk to them. You'll be able to send postcards to your representatives if you wish. You can talk to folks from Indivisible, or the Ithaca Teachers Union will be there. We have lots of people going to be there. So please come, show your support and solidarity with the students of Parkland and all students who want to go to school and not worry that they might get shot today.
Thanks very much, Amanda. I know a number of legislators are working on that rally, that event. Anna?
Yeah, I wanted to thank you, Amanda, for spearheading this. And it's been a total pleasure working with the women of the legislature and some of Common Council who've been a part of this. It's been super inspiring. And I just wanted to thank the students who left for 17 minutes of silence this past week to honor the 17 who were killed in Florida. And I went to the high school, Ithaca High School, and I think that there was a lot of concern that students wouldn't take it seriously, students would use it as an excuse to get out of class. I heard any number of assumptions from various people that it would be disruptive. The experience was one of the more profound, inspiring, and hopeful experiences that I've had on the legislature. There were several hundred people, everyone completely silent, and seriously honoring the loss of lives and recognizing the reality of the experience that students face that's very different than many previous generations. And I am more hopeful having had that engagement with our students, their thoughtfulness, their dedication, their drive, their articulation afterwards. So I just wanted to share that experience because it was quite inspiring, and say thank you again to all of our youth and our community.
Thanks, Anna. Anyone else? Anne.
I think Bonnie left, but I want to thank Bonnie and Kenneth for speaking about homelessness and food insecurity and its issues that are very important, and I pledge to work on those issues. So thank you for bringing them up.
Thank you. Anyone else? Leslyn.
Thank you. Thank you, Anna. Thank you, Amanda. Sean and I went up to DeWitt Middle School for that walkout and had a very similar and moving yet hopeful experience. So thanks to them. I was searching my phone to find an event that's happening at the space tonight that has to do with hunger and food security. I could not find it because I wanted to share, and I appreciated Kenneth coming and talking about food recycling and food rescue, because I think the gentleman who is speaking, I don't know why I can't find it tonight, who wrote a book, does have concerns about enabling behaviors that governmental organizations and others do when we have these safety net services for folks who are homeless or hungry. I think he also, and I didn't get to read the entire book, just little snippets of it, I think he also had concerns which were very warranted in terms of if large, if large organizations and businesses would pay folks a living wage, then we wouldn't have to have safety net services. So there's a balance of thoughts that he shared, and I'm sorry I can't be there for it, but I'm here with you lovely people. So I appreciate Kenneth just talking about that, because it's so important. Not everyone, unfortunately, has or is able to work necessarily to make that living wage. Some people are just unable to work, and so what do we do with them? Just cast them aside, sort of things. So I assume it would be a very engaging conversation. So if anybody is watching us and they don't want to keep watching us, and you want to go to the space at Green Star and talk about this issue, Big Hunger, I encourage you to please go, because there's so many sides to a story of being down that road, and it's not for the lack of wanting to find work or wanting to work or any of those things. Not being able to and being hungry, it's not a good place to be. And so I applaud government for having these safety net services for people who need, and organizations like the Friendship Donation Network for recycling, rescuing, and having food available for folks to eat and providing for a homeless population. I had the experience of going out for the, I know Martha was trying as well, for the point in time count on one of the cold winter nights to go out and count people who were out sleeping in the cold. I slept in my car, and I didn't think I was homeless. When I saw what people were doing on the bridges, on ice, that was even, that was jarring. I know it happens, but it was just, wow, it was something else. You know, a whole, for me, although I know the experience, a whole new perspective on homelessness. And not because people just choose to be homeless, because circumstances put people in those places. So, you know, and going out there, it just felt awful counting people who were sleeping out there in the cold. But I know it's something we needed to do. So anyhow, I just wanted to share that and tell people to go. Thank you, Anna, for finding it. My phone wasn't working fast enough.
It's a book, if you can.
The book is that. Go ahead.
It's Big Hunger, and the author is, I found it too, the author is Andy Fisher. And
yes, he will be there as part of a panel.
5:30 to 7:30 tonight.
Or read the book.
And or read the book. Thanks very much, Leslie. Ann?
For folks watching online, I just want to remind people in the villages of Dryden, Trumansburg, Cayuga Heights, and Groton that the village elections are today, and the polls are open till 9 p.m. And in Trumansburg, a village of about 2,000 people, so far only 148 people have voted as of a little few minutes ago. So just wanted to remind folks there's still time till 9 o'clock. So get out and vote.
And did you mention Freeville? They also have an election.
Freeville also. Sorry about that.
Wow. You said 148 people have voted?
Right.
Wow. Okay. Mike, I see your vote. I voted sticker.
I did.
Yes, you did. And the village of Dryden, how many people voted by the time you were there?
Well, I came in right after noon, right after the polls opened. There were only four or five by that time. But
okay.
Usually after work is when the group comes in.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. Dan.
I just wanted to mention at our last meeting, the county legislature passed a resolution about WSKG. Urging it to be reinstated in Tompkins County. And since then, the town of Ithaca has passed a similar resolution. The city of Ithaca has passed a similar resolution. The town of Caroline and the town of Danby have all passed these resolutions. Maybe there are more that I don't know of. So I just want to report that.
Thank you very much, Dan. And I'll mention that in my report. Leslin?
I have one other bite of the apple. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I'm getting
sure.
a terrible headache. And I'm not remembering anything. So I don't know what's going on. I might need one of those brownie things or muffins that Dan makes. That might help. Saturday, there's a lot happening on Saturday. Saturday morning, the community is hosting Wynton Marsalis.
Yes.
We will be at the Beverly J. Martin Elementary School because it's going to be a large event. The doors open at 9:50 in the morning. And at 10:45, he will, you know, have a rehearsal with middle schoolers and folks. And at 10:45, the community is invited to engage in a Q&A with him, perhaps, maybe, have him play a little bit for us. So you all are invited to attend. And I also wanted to mention something that's kudos to us that has to do with our resolution that we passed 2 years ago on domestic violence as a human right. I don't know if anybody had a chance to go to the viewing of the documentary at Cinemopolis. I did the one at Cornell, and there was a lot of thanks to the Tompkins County Legislature for the resolution that we passed that was very, very well worded, very well done, and a model for others to use. So I do want to encourage us as a legislature to think about reminding our colleagues in the other counties to get on board and perhaps do something similar. The woman whose life the documentary was based on and who this resolution was based on was there and present, and it was interesting to engage with her and have conversation. So I do want to bring back good news of kudos to us for the work we did around that.
Thanks, Leslin.
Oh, my gosh, you're going to ask me. I don't remember anything, Anna. Not a thing.
Henry.
Okay. I want to talk about Cornell hockey, which lost at Lake Placid to Princeton in the ECAC semifinals, but still got number one seed in the NCAA tournament. And we're playing BU at 1 p.m. on March 24th in Worcester, Massachusetts, and it'll be on ESPN News. If they win, they'll play the next day at 4 o'clock. That's it.
We are a multidisciplinary legislature, everybody. We cover all the bases. Before anybody out there watching runs off to the space, I just wanted to add to Dan's thing about charter and spectrum. I did get an email today from Charter Communications, and I had shared some of my communications with you before. Customers can contact, and I'm going to read a couple of numbers in a minute. WENY, we are told, was no longer able to grant Charter and Spectrum the right to carry in Tompkins County. That's ENY. And specifically required that we remove the carriage. The customer should contact Lily, who owns WENY, Lily Broadcasting. Their number is 1-508-651-4994. This is all in your red folder, so you can share it with your list. Again, Lily Broadcasting for the WENY issue, 508-651-4994. And for WSKG, the phone number to call is 855-707-7238. That's 855-707-7238. And then there's a long list of what you're supposed to do on the menu, about which things you're supposed to ask for. I will put this up on Facebook, but at least people, I'm not going to read the whole list of prompts right now, but it's in your folders. We're not just going to go quietly on this one. So, yeah, Mike.
It sounds like the two are the reasons that they're pulling the station seems very different from your email. Like, it seems like Lily Broadcasting doesn't want to be on cable anymore. SKG, I have no idea why that's happening, if that's a Spectrum decision or whose decision.
Spectrum told me that was their decision.
Okay.
Yeah. WNY, they said the ABC affiliate or ABC company said they weren't going to do it anymore. I just got this today. I haven't had a chance to go back and forth with them. I thought I would share those numbers. Deborah.
I just want to say that I had communicated with the station manager at WENY several weeks ago, and that is bizarrely inconsistent with what I was told. That's all I got to say.
Okay. Interesting. Well, we'll just keep pushing. I know, and I think the town of Dryden, I believe, also passed a resolution on about SKG. All right. So if there's nothing else from yes, there is. Yes, Mike?
I just wanted to ask, Martha, did they tell us if when we get to tech support, where that's located? Is that in Indonesia? The Philippines?
Mike, you're so cynical.
When I call tech support for my cable, I'm usually talking to someone in one of those countries.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. I don't know, but
it's a little far away to be serious about our problem here.
Well, okay. So it says at that point, if the customer says agent, as soon as the options are offered, they will automatically be connected to a customer care rep, wherever that is. So let's give it a shot. Let's all try it. Okay, not right now. Right now, I'd like to welcome Rod Howe, the director of the History Center.
Yay.
And we're going to pull the screens down. Mm-hmm. And I'd like Rich to introduce what this is all about. Sure. In a minute.
Thank you, Martha. The planning for the Tompkins Center for History and Culture has been proceeding at a very good clip, and there's a lot going on right now, which I thought it made sense for the legislature to get an update on. And so Rod Howe has graciously come over from the History Center and representing not only the History Center but the several not-for-profits that are participating and the Chamber of Commerce Visitors Center. But he's going to show us some of the designs that are coming through for what the building's going to look like. So, thank you, Rod.
Before I start, I think this is the second time I've been here that the city has made a presentation. I sometimes forget that I'm a town of Ithaca board member, and the town of Ithaca probably hasn't been here for a while giving an update. So we have to get on the stick and have
yes.
the town represented here.
Absolutely.
As well. So this is a quick visual update, but I'll just add some other information as well. You're familiar with the building. You'll see a new doorway. So you see the main entrance that says Tompkins Center for History and Culture. To the right of that, you'll see a new doorway. There actually used to be a door in the building right there.
Rod, you can use your cursor as a pointer.
There we go, right there. That is space that is going to be used by the Tompkins Trust Company. They've reserved 120 square feet. So it's interesting that there used to be a door there, and there will be another door there. This just shows you walking in. We've been working with Iron Design on some graphics, as well as Tesla Studio out of New York City, and the architect has been Stream Collaborative, based here in Ithaca, New York. This shows you we're calling it the atrium. So when you first go in to the center, there's already sort of that space. It's actually going to be a larger atrium. It shows you that there will be what we call a tower, an exhibit tower in the middle of the room, but also a really wonderful graphic. It might not be this particular graphic, but we do all like Tagannock Falls, and Tagannock Falls is known throughout the world, and so it's a great image to use. So it may or may not be the image that welcomes people when they come into the space. This particular tower in the atrium will be a changing exhibit. At times, a partner will have it. At times, we'll say to Cornell University, you have the space, or Ithaca College, or Tompkins-Cortland Community College, or we may come to the county and say, does the county want to exhibit something in that space? We also may interpret the history of the Tompkins Trust Company in that space. So it will give us a lot of options for changing exhibit in that atrium. My guess is that people will start referring to this just as Tompkins Center. Meet me at the Tompkins Center, and that this will be a neat gathering space, this little atrium space. This is an image in the evening. We hope that that there will be a warm, inviting image from outside when people walk by, so there will be opportunities to light the imagery different in different ways and even do some sort of so this shows a fall scene over the falls. There could be a spring scene over the falls, so to add some variety to that. This is looking just back from the other direction. There will certainly be a partner wall, naming all the partners that will be in the space. There will be a donor wall. The kiosk that you see there will be an opportunity to tell folks more about the partners who are in the space, as well as what's happening in the center on any given day or within that week. So it will be an interactive display there, a small place for people to sit as well. If let me go back. How do I go back? Previous. I'm not moving in the right direction. Previous.
Can you use the buttons on the keyboard?
That probably is easier, isn't it? What's not clear here is right after the waterfall, there will be a well-delineated entrance to the visitor center into retail space. So people will have an option. They're in the atrium. They can either go into the history center, over to the Community Arts Partnership Gallery program space, or into the visitor center. So what you're going to see next is you're walking into the visitor center, which will also have a retail space. So we think that this is going to be and by the way, so the bank is over on your right-hand side. It's going to be an enclosed space. You won't be able to get to the bank from inside the building, but it's a bump out within the retail space. Just another image of the retail space, the visitor center. Now you're looking back out into that atrium. The other option, as I mentioned, is you can go into the History Center from the atrium, or over to the left, you would be able to go into the art gallery, the program space. Once you're in the exhibit space, you can see what an obvious attraction will be. The Tommy plane will take up quite a bit of space and be a prominent feature. Remember, the date has changed, so make sure you have on your calendar September 29th. That's when the plane will fly at the Ithaca Airport. So September 29th.
I think it changed, Rod.
It was September 22nd.
No, it's 15th now.
Okay, we have time to get this
okay.
worked out.
So anyway, September. the towers in the space are we're using place as a way of organizing exhibit people, land, architecture, culture, and enterprise. There will be also opportunities for changing exhibits. You see a small space on the left-hand side where partners at times can have some artifacts in there, but we can also use the wall against that for changing exhibits. There will, of course, be an artifact wall to highlight things, and we'll certainly tell you what's we'll give you the history of what we choose to show on the artifact wall. One of the small bank vaults will be used as a place to go and record your stories. We also, you two people can sit in there so they can record a story if they want together. Certainly there will be a vetting. We won't just automatically upload anything that gets recorded in that small studio, but we are hoping that a number of folks will take the time to, and there will be some prompt questions to kind of guide them into that. This is the timeline. If you're familiar with the bank, behind the teller stations, there are two bank vaults. We'll break through the wall, and this will be a walk-through timeline. It's geared in three different ways. It's for the skimmers, so people who just don't have a lot of patience. They just sort of want to know what are the highlights of the timeline. Just give me 25 highlights. So on the right-hand side, that's for the skimmers. The left-hand side will go more deeply into some of the social themes of our history. So that's for the swimmers. And then there will be kiosk where you can dive more deeply into our history onto kiosk in the timeline. So we think this is going to be one of the most interesting features, although the plane, there's actually several interesting features. This is a picture of the new research library. The archives will be behind where you see the glass enclosed bookcases. So our archives will be behind that space. I don't have a good picture. So right before, if you're familiar when you go into the bank right now, the very large round vault door, are folks familiar with that round vault door? At first we were told it was going to stay, and we were pretty excited that it was going to stay, but they are moving it to the new location. But that's okay, because in that space, right before you go on the timeline, we're devoting that space to tell the history of the indigenous population on this land. And we're working with the Kuga Nation representatives to make sure that we're doing that well. So I think we're going to use a map and superimpose the story over a map to tell that story. So I'm pretty excited about that. Let's see, timeline. You probably can't see. This is the first floor. So it's the exhibit space, the lobby, atrium. I also called it the visitor center. I did not show you a picture of the program space. So that will be also the art gallery.
Could you just use the cursor and orient us? So to the right is the sort of bank alley.
This is the Okay. Here's the atrium or lobby. This is the main exhibit space. This is the library that I showed you right here. These are the archives. This is the art gallery program space. This is the time through the walk-through vaults. This is where we'll interpret the indigenous history, it will be in other places as well. This is the story vault, and then some offices downstairs.
And where's the CVB and the retail space?
Right here.
Okay.
Oops.
Thank you.
So you can see there, right there.
Okay. Thank you.
Second floor has offices for the History Center staff, for the Discovery Trail director, for the Sustainability Center, for Dorothy Cotton Institute. There's a conference room that will be available for others to use as well. If you are familiar with the space when you go in, there's a hallway that goes above that you can look down over it. So this is the Rich John Staff Lounge, because Rich has suggested we expand that space and make it into a little bit of a lounge. So we have done that here. So the Rich John Staff Lounge is right there.
So those are tenants?
What's that?
Are those tenants,
right.
Be careful, Rich. That sounds like that's a donor's naming.
Yes, there's a naming opportunity associated with that. And then on the third floor, the visitor center will have a small office, the Community Arts Partnership, and Wharton Studio Museum, and I guess the Sustainability Center is on this floor. We also need every corner we can to for our own archives, so some of that space is being used for textile archive storage. Just a few milestones, which I think you know most of these already. We're in the final stages of having the partners sign a memorandum of agreement. This board saw the draft MOU with all the exhibits in December. We're fine-tuning that, and hopefully everyone will sign that by the end of March into April. We have a new website, which I think was on the very first slide. You can go and check out more information, tompkins/center.net. You already know about the $1.365 million awarded through the state CFA process. That's both NISCA, New York State Council on the Arts funding, and Empire State Development funding. Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton has verbally committed $500,000. The county has to do the paperwork, though, to get that because it has to be a municipality. So we've met with Jason about that. The capital campaign is underway. The construction bid package for the build-out of the space was sent out last week. And my understanding is that the county is sending out its bid package for the code improvements this week. And then next week we'll be sending out bids for the exhibit build-out space. So that's in progress. We're starting to pack at the History Center if anyone has extra time and wants to help us pack. There are still plenty of naming opportunities. If anyone is interested in a naming opportunity, please contact me and I'll discuss with you the possibilities. The next gathering to talk about the capital campaign and get people excited will be on April 19th at 5:30 at the Travis Hyde offices. If you haven't been at their new offices, it's the former Williams House on North Cuga Street across from DeWitt Park. It's exquisite. So it will be a great place to have a little gathering to tell people about the capital campaign. We hope to do one more gathering in the bank after the county buys the bank and before and once the bank has moved down and before we start construction. So that would be sometime in May. Questions?
Thank you very much, Rob. That's very, very exciting. Anna and then Mike.
Thank you so much for this. Is it possible to send an email invitation for that event?
Yes. Oh, believe me, so you will all get one.
Okay. And the other question was, the selection of the organizations that would be participating, it's a discussion that we've sort of had internally, I think, and a question we couldn't answer. If it was done of first come, first serve, if there was a reaching out to nonprofits that represent, like, indigenous populations here and different groups here, and just trying to get a sense of.
Yeah, it's like with history, things become fuzzy after a while, so I have to go back because it just sort of all certain people just started coming to the meetings, and so there wasn't, a full vetting process. It was just folks who we knew were potentially interested. We've had conversations with folks who aren't listed as partners saying that they can use this space. I know I've had conversations with the Multicultural Resource Center, with the Asian American Association, with Latino Civic Association, with others, that the space is also available for them to use for events and things. Some people I know are wondering how we made those decisions, and I think it was just some key, the chamber needed space, the CVB, the CAP, the History Center. So there was this core group that started, and then it's a little hazy how the rest kind of came into it. Dorothy Cotton Institute was in from the beginning as well. But what probably is important to know is we have this, one of the schedules, which you may or may not remember seeing, is a process for deciding if one of the partners chooses to opt out at some point, how would you go about choosing who else might come in? And so there's a well-thought-out process that includes the county having some oversight in that process.
So the one last question was, is the space at night going to be rentable for community organizations to have events in that?
Yeah, so it would be primarily the program space that would be available for others to rent. The conference rooms as well, but probably the program room would be the most, because we've designed that, the floor plan, so that the exhibit space can be locked, but people can still get to the program space and still have access to the new bathrooms.
Thanks very much, Rod. I got Mike Sigler, then Rich, and then Mike Lane.
I have a bunch of questions, so I'm going to shoot you an email, but two that kind of popped out of me. The visitor center, you were saying that's going to be on the third floor. Wouldn't that make more sense to put that on the first floor?
Yeah, they just have an office on the third floor. But the visitor center is on the first floor with the retail space. Gotcha. So they're right here.
So it is like a walk-up kind of thing. Okay.
Right, right.
Fantastic. My other question was, I see that you have indigenous peoples, but are you going to kind of put in displays on some of the things that kind of made why we're here, like, you know, the mills, the salt mine, ferry boats, Cornell? Is that what you're envisioning?
Right. So some of that will be in the timeline, and then some will be in these five-story towers, people, land, architecture, culture, and enterprise. So it will give us an opportunity to tell the history through different lenses. But there will be redundancy. There's also going to be times that you can go up to a kiosk and dive more deeply into a topic. So, yeah, one of the things that I think will be very different from the current History Center is you don't necessarily get a sampling of the history of Ithaca and Tompkins County, given depending on whatever exhibit we have here. This is going to have less changing exhibits, and there will be more opportunity to really get an understanding of the history of Ithaca and Tompkins County by going through the space. But enough will change to keep residents coming back as well.
Rich, and Mike Lane.
Thank you. I wanted to just comment on Anna's question. The governance issues are what are under discussion now. So those are getting fleshed out. And the idea is to try to be as broad and inclusive as possible while keeping the focus on history and culture. And one of the things we've talked about that needs to be developed in this governance plan is how we the organizations that are there take the first crack at if there's an opening, who sits there as a tenant. But beyond that, we've also talked about using the center as an incubator for new not-for-profits that align with that mission. That if there's a new initiative that they don't have a lot of funding, that they could use the conference rooms, they'd pay a nominal amount to use office equipment, and the email and everything else. And hopefully we will be allowing new not-for-profits to start up and see if they're viable at a very low cost. There's some room in the basement for locker rooms or locker space so that you could store supplies and things. But we're trying to think about how to make it as flexible as possible for new organizations to come in and get the benefit of it.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Being very inclusive is very important to us. Some of you have heard me say, part of my goal as being director of the History Center is to have everyone in the county feels that some aspect of their narrative is captured, archived, reflected, or interpreted through the History Center. So that's a tall order, but it's something that I'm very mindful of.
Thanks, Ryan. Mike?
Glad to hear you talking about the exhibit area for the Native Americans. The Bicentennial Commission has been very supportive of that idea. We've been casting about with what is the right way to commemorate the fact that even though our county started in 1817 and we were settled in the late 1700s, there was civilization going on before that in Tompkins County. I would just point out one thing, and that is as important as the Cayugas were, the eastern part of our county was in the Onondaga lands, I should say. So we don't want to forget about them.
And that's some of what that map will allow us to tell with different images being superimposed on a map there.
Good.
Rod, I have a couple of questions. One is, can you show on this layout where the trust company is? I'm a little confused on that.
Oh, sure. It's right here.
Oh, right there. Okay, so that's just an ATM.
So they have a separate entrance right from the commons.
And that's for an ATM, basically?
Yes.
Okay, great. And then you said, you mentioned place. You said people, land, architecture, culture, and enterprise. Is that what you?
Correct.
Okay, good. Thank you. All right. Any other questions? Dave.
Not really a question, just a little additional information. I spoke with the REL just prior to this meeting, and county did go out for those bids today. They're due back in 3 weeks.
Great. Thank you.
Let's hope they do better than the TC3 Child Care Center. So. All right. Anything else for Rod? Thank you so much.
Thank
we really appreciate your time, and it's great to see all the work that's gone into this.
We'll come back with other updates, and I know I'm meeting with the new county legislators on Friday. So.
Terrific.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Rod.
Thank you.
All right, put the screens up. Before we go to other reports, I wonder if we can release Barb Ekstrom, and if we could go to Dave McKenna. Would you take us to packet page 40 and resolution H?
Okay, I'd like to move resolution H to resolution in support of New York proposed legislation to increase food rescue and recycling, and that's. Document ID 7680.
All right. And seconded by Dan. Discussion. Since you've sat here, Barb, you want to, you know, take a minute here and tell us what this is about? Tell the public what this is about. We know what it's about.
Yeah. The state legislature, as proposed by Governor Cuomo, is considering in this budget cycle the opportunity to pass legislation that would require larger generators of food scraps, those that throw away 2 tons or more a week, to donate, in other words, rescue food as well as recycle the food scraps. We're in a great position in this county to really make progress. Since we have the food bank, as well as, of course, you heard about the Friendship Donation Network, to increase rescue, there's going to be grant money available for these organizations to move forward and make progress as well. As well as funding, as you know, we received $250,000 to build a tipping area at the recycling center so that the haulers of food scraps can come to our facility, and then the material will be hauled to Cuga Compost. We're very fortunate to have a mom-and-pop operation that does a great job in producing a very valuable resource in our county. And, of course, there's the collection aspect. And we provide for funding for the generators of food scraps if they do a waste assessment and a Re-Business Partners program. And so this is really going to be just fitting right in with our overall plans for the next 10 years. It will also reduce greenhouse gas emissions throughout the state, methane gas in particular. And so I applaud the state for doing this. I want to thank Dan Klein because last year he helped to develop this resolution. We weren't successful at the state level, but I am hearing really positive things about what could happen this year. And so we would really be welcoming this, I think, in Tompkins County.
Thank you, Barbara. Anna.
I just wanted to see if you could talk a little bit about the Friendship Donation Network and how it fits in and what work you're doing with them overall.
Yeah. Well, you heard from the organization briefly today. They have a wonderful website, and we'll also be getting you some information. One of the things that's unique about Friendship Donation Network is that they really put a lot of importance on fresh food. So they don't rely on the higher costs of distribution centers, although they have a small one. But their goal is to move food, say, from Cornell or Wegmans directly to organizations. So it winds up not going to a distribution center and repacked, but it goes directly, whether it's to the local locations or even Tompkins Community Action, a lot of the different organizations. What we've been doing is we've been helping them to identify what might be possible here. We do a lot of work with distribution and collection and things within our own organization. But this year, we're just taking bites out of the apple. They are working. We gave them, I think it's $3,750. They're producing a video to target generators directly to explain what their services are and what they can do so that they can meet directly with generators. They're also going to be doing more in the way of education. Their main goal is to do as much education with the businesses that could take advantage of their service. One of the things that we're going to be partnering on more next year is how do we take our successful re-business partners program, which is basically dumpster diving and looking at every opportunity possible for not seeing that waste be generated. And clearly, waste prevention is best. You know, how do you not buy these things? And we're helping businesses right now on looking at not, like, buying as much, not wasting as much, but also bringing Friendship Donation Network into the conversations when we start the work of dumpster diving and looking at what the opportunities are. And then we generate these reports, and we continue to follow up with the businesses so that we can help, you know, make things happen. And it's great because they also pay an annual fee. And this is a direct service. We've gone to over 300 businesses over the last 7 or 8 years in the county. So this will be an add-on, and I think that's going to be a real plus here in this community.
Ann?
Thank you. Barb, I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for talking to us new legislators and giving us, you know, the history of the solid waste and recycling center, and that might not be the correct name, is materials management. And,
yeah, of the whole history of what we do.
Right. So thank you. I know.
You're welcome. It was really enjoyable.
And it's really great to see, you know, how it's evolved. I've been here since 84, and it's just really wonderful to see. I was thrilled to see in the early 90s in Trumansburg to have a tipping station where you could go and personally bring your recycling once a week, and now how it's evolved over the years so that now it's curbside. You just have to put it out, and now it's evolving in that area. So curbside, people can put their compost out. So.
The next decade, though, has to be about getting to 80% diversion, and we're really going to be focusing a lot on prevention and reduction as a way of really moving the needle forward as well.
Thank you so much, Barb. Appreciate all the information. Any other discussion? Ready to vote on the resolution? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Barb. Thank you, Dave. And we will come back to the other resolution and your report. On my report tonight, I already mentioned Spectrum. I want to let you know that a number of us met on Friday with Senator Jim Seward, who represents the eastern towns in Tompkins County in the state legislature, and had a good conversation with him about the whole wide range of issues, as we had talked about with Seward, with O'Mara and Lifton. In particular, the health insurance consortium is an area that we talked about with him, and hoping to restart a conversation about enabling nonprofit organizations to join in our consortium. He is chair of the insurance committee, and our consortium has worked with him a lot over the years. The push to try to get the law changed, Article 47 in the law changed so that nonprofits could join, we'd been energetic about that a while back. It's sort of fallen by the wayside. I think we encouraged him to ramp that back up, and we'll follow up with him to make sure it doesn't get lost. There were a number of you all joined us. I also want to mention that we the fourth member of our delegation, Pam Helming, senator who has the town of Lansing in her district. Kathy's been trying valiantly to get on her schedule. We're now working on a conference call,
We understand. We only have one town in her whole district, so maybe we can get a conference call scheduled with her, we hope, before the budget is passed. And so that's my report. Any questions? Deborah?
I just was wondering when we were going to take the reserved for Senator Seward sign off that parking space.
Oh, right. Whoops.
Thanks.
Maybe he's not still here. Okay. That was Katrina's idea, and he appreciate. He actually specifically mentioned he appreciated having a parking spot. Thanks for the reminder. He also said that there was, and this is related to something that's not on the agenda yet, but we're going to put it on. He was in support of the internet sales tax measure as supported by, as proposed by Governor Cuomo. Tom O'Mara said he was also in support of it, so maybe that'll be one of those things that the legislature will negotiate and actually agree to. So I'm sure we'll get to that in a few minutes. All right, any other questions? Jason, County Administrator's report.
Thank you. Just to report that right now I'll be working over the next 3 to 4 weeks with Kevin and trying to get ready for the budget retreat, doing budget projections, having good solid numbers, the best we can have them for you for our discussion towards the end of April. And we'll also be following the state budget as that transforms over the next 10 to 11 days to see if it's adopted on time and what the short and long-term impacts will be to us, if any, with the adoption of the state budget. Other than that, today's the first day of spring.
Yeah.
Happy spring.
We didn't notice it. It was cold this morning.
It was cold this morning.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason. Any questions for Jason? All right, thank you. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I do not have a report.
Thanks. Any questions for Jonathan? Rick Snyder, Finance Director.
Thank you very much. Turn to page 5 in the agenda packet. And also there is an insert in your red folder for the February sales tax. The page 5 in your agenda is the January sales tax distribution summary. And then over the weekend I was able to get February's done, so that's why February shows up in your red folder. And we'll look at both months. If we're looking at January, you can see that the county's portion of sales tax distribution, which is that middle section, line 6 and 7, you can see that the January portion was up just 0.02%, almost flat compared to last year. And moving over to the right-hand columns for the county, at the end of January, the year-to-date tax distributions obviously are the same as the monthly, but they do total $2.7 million compared to roughly the same amount in 2017. The increase was only $517, or again, that 0.02%. Now, when we look at January, I've been following what's been happening nationwide over the last 2 to 3 months, and retail sales on a national basis are pretty much flat. The economy's doing well, but retail sales has pretty much been flat. So when you look at January, that pretty well mimics or reflects what was going on nationally at the same time. But now let's turn to the second report for February. And as we look at the February figures, for the county's portion, the sales tax distributions for February was up 11.4% compared to last year. That's the line 6 and 7 there in the middle of this chart under the February column. That's just comparing February of 2018 to February of 2017. As of the end of February, the year-to-date portion, which is over on the right-hand side, those tax distributions for the county total $5,118,771 compared to $4,871,130 in 2017. This represents an increase of $247,641 year over year, or 5.08%. So at this point in time, with just 2 months under our belt, we're up 5% over where we were last year at this time. Any questions on sales tax?
Ann.
You mentioned national retail sales are flat. Does that include restaurants? What does retail mean?
Well, that's mostly looking at retail sales. I believe it. I'm not sure if it includes restaurants or not, but it's the figure that they use mostly, like in the Wall Street Journal, when they're looking at retail sales, bricks and mortar stores, everything considered, internet sales, everything all combined. And a lot of people were concerned over the last 2 or 3 months because the stock market has gone up and down so much. But that doesn't really reflect the true state of the economy, which has gradually been building up, but retail sales in and of itself has remained pretty much flat. Consumer confidence is way up, and that's probably at a very high record reading at this point in time. I just thought it was pretty good for Tompkins County to be able to show after 2 months that we're about at that 5% increase over last year's level. Now, looking back, our previous county administrator would always say, let's wait until the quarterly comes out. I'm sure Jason's of the same mind that we really don't want to make any serious predictions until we have 3 full months under our, under our coat. We can really predict a little bit better with 1 full quarter. The reason for that is there's a lot of adjustments that are made from businesses' future or their past recalculations of what was owed to the state. The state makes a contribution to us at the end of March, at the end of the third quarter, which kind of makes up for past under-collections and sometimes credits over-collections. So that every third month at the end of the quarter, there's always a true-up that the state does to make you whole for that quarter. What we've typically seen, at least in the last couple of years, is that January and February have been low months, with March being quite a high month. I'm not saying that's going to happen again this year with February being so high, but that's pretty much what has happened in the past. So we are tracking quite well at this point in time.
I'm kind of interested in looking at the city, inside the city versus towns and villages. For both January and February, the towns and villages are up, and in January the city was actually down from the previous year, and then in February up a lot less than outside the city, which is kind of interesting. Usually
it's very odd when you see one, like the city, one sector down and then up higher in another just 1 month later. I think sometimes it's odd the way that maybe sometimes these stores and operations submit their sales tax. They may submit their sales tax in a very unequal
method. All right. Any other questions? Mike.
A good example of what you're talking about, the readjustments by the businesses, happened to us, sort of an extreme example. In the early 2000s, when we got an additional $1 million, which we didn't anticipate, and we were sure, David Squires was our director of finance then, he was sure it was going to get taken away from us, never was, and the best we could figure out was that a major store had been saying it was located or reporting in a different county than ours, and so probably some other county got a nasty surprise, but we ended up with that $1 million, as it turned out.
And the state does make those corrections on a quarterly basis, so we always hold our breath to the very end of each quarter.
The other thing that I would mention, Rick, with the new folks coming on, I think there's going to be a request. We'll talk about it in Budget Committee, a request for a tutorial session on the sales tax and how we get what in the sales tax agreement with the city, for example. We'll figure out a time for that. I'm sure some of the folks that aren't new could use a refresher on some of that, too. So I just wanted to mention that.
I was going to say, we should all take that course. Okay. All right.
Had one last point that was non-sales tax related. That was the current state of our audits. We just completed 2 out of the 4 audits yesterday with the TCIDA and the Tompkins task now being completely finished. One of them has formal board approval to go through, but for all intents and purposes, all those audits are done. The health insurance consortium audit is in full swing right now. We'll be working on that for the next month or so, and then immediately after that, we'll keep plowing ahead for another couple months after that, doing the county's audit. So we have 2 down and the 2 big ones to go.
Would you tell people what task is?
Tompkins task is the Tompkins Tobacco Asset Securitization Corporation. Task is a method in which we receive bond money years ago from large tobacco settlements. And there still is some residual monies that come in from those past loss settlements from the tobacco companies that come to this particular organization, Tompkins Task, that part of the money pays off the bonds and the other half comes directly to the county as a revenue source for the county.
Anna?
How much longer are we expecting that, or is that indefinite, the amount that's coming at this point?
As long as people smoke, Jason said. But the bonds go out like another 36 or 40 years, something like that. It's a very, very long-term thing. But the receipts do decline. It was predicted that they would decline by 3% a year based on less and less people smoking. But as that number drops of people who smoke, those revenues diminish.
And what bonds are you referring to that they cover?
There were a large amount of bonds that were floated in 2000 and 2005 that the counties were able to gain monies, and they use those for certain capital projects. But they didn't bond all the proceeds that were predicted to come from these settlement dollars, these tobacco settlement dollars. They only bonded 50%. And got the money up from it to capital. That's why we still receive the other 50% as a general revenue source that goes to help balance your budget each year to the tune of about $550,000 a year is an added revenue source for your general fund. And that's in your unallocated revenues, that division 9999 unallocated revenues. That's part of your budget that you adopt each and every year.
Thank you very much, Rick. Appreciate all the information. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Mike, Lane.
I'd like to add a Resolution J, a resolution in support of including the Internet Fairness Conformity Act in the 2018 New York State budget.
So moved and seconded by Anna. We need to vote to add it. All in favor of adding this to the agenda tonight? Any opposed? That's unanimous. And Shauna?
I would like to withdraw Resolution Number A, Adoption of Youth Services Advisory Board Bylaws, ID 7607. We would like to bring that back to committee.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anna?
No.
It does need to be seconded.
Yeah,
okay. All right. With that, the consent agenda. Appointments to the Hillview Road Landfill Citizen Advisory Committee, Dan Klein, and to the Air Services Board, Katie Borgella. And just Resolution B, authorizing to accept increased Safe Harbor grant funding and execute contract with Youth Services Department, Social Services Department, ID 7619. I have a motion on the consent agenda, moved by Amanda, seconded by Deborah. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. First report, let's go to Anna Kellis, Chair of Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality.
I'm going to jump into it. All right, then. We have a meeting this coming Monday. It is a very packed agenda, and I apologize to all the PDAC members. It is, as I was just told today, 150 pages, so please start reading it now.
Not right now.
But, you know, after this meeting. There are a couple things, highlights of presentations that are going to happen. One is a transportation-oriented development plan that was developed by TCAT. And part of it is because they'd like to start having the conversation of how it'd be helpful in the community if they were part of the conversation a lot earlier with developers, and how that would influence the community. So I think that's a great conversation. If any of you want to come, that would be wonderful. We also have the green business plan that is being put forward for the city and the town. And the reason that I thought it would be great for us to know is obviously it will have a huge impact on the greenhouse gas emissions goals that we have for the county, if it is successful, which we're hoping that it is. So if we understand it, we can promote it and be champions for it, which I'm hoping we all will be. The last is the continued discussion of the paper or the plastic bag ban, and it has a couple twists in it, recognizing some of the conversations that have been happening at the state level. So I encourage everybody to check that out when it comes out in the agenda tomorrow. And that is at 3 p.m. on Monday, this coming Monday, the 26th.
Thanks, Anna. Any questions? Thank you. Chair of Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Lane.
Yes, so our committee met on March 13th. We started with a tour of the Human Resources Department, led by Commissioner Amy Guerrera. There's been a lot of turnover in that department. They're trying to come up to full speed, full complement of the employees, and that's been a difficult process because some of those positions are hard to find good candidates for. However, when we looked in there, they're using about every square inch of their allotment of space, floor space there, and they really need to take a look at how they can be reconfigured, particularly with respect to the new people there. And I think it's only fair to the employees that they have a comfortable space to work in. I think they can be more productive. So we took that into account. Obviously, we aren't acting on anything having to do with that. That's going to be facilities issues, of course. But it helped us understand what that department is experiencing presently. We talked a little bit about TC3. Their budget's going to be coming up soon because, remember, they're not on a calendar fiscal year the way the county is. They're on a July 1st fiscal year like the state is. And we know we have to be talking with Cortland. Cortland has changed, has a lot of new legislators over there, but they still don't have an administrator. The budget person they had left, and so now has the treasurer in Cortland. So we've got to be working with them, hopefully, whether they can come up with some additional funding this year, as we've asked for the last 2 years of Cortland, I don't know, but that's on our radar. Also, as Martha mentioned, the bids came in for the child care center at TC3, which everyone was looking forward to being construction starting this year. Unfortunately, the $4 million budget was exceeded by the lowest bids, that was just over $5 million. There's a lot of work going on in Tompkins County, so it's hard to get the bids in the area where we would like to see them. So there is not enough money to build it. They're either going to have to shrink the project, meaning fewer beds, particularly possibly in the infants area. They may have to do some structural changes. They may have to raise some more money. The money for this project, it was not county money from the two counties. It was from the state, $2.5 million and $1.5 million, which was from private donations. So not likely they'll get started on it this year. I hope I'm wrong, but that's the way it sounded at their TC3 board meeting. We spent a little time looking at the short history of our casino revenues that we've had. We know that we will continue to receive them, but how much we actually can rely on and how much we actually budget are big ifs. We have some in this year's budget that we've used. We used the one-time money from the licensing fees toward the Tompkins County Center for History and Culture purchase. We'll be talking a little bit more about that, but with more casinos coming online in the Catskills and Albany, another Native American one in Madison County, where there are now three, we aren't sure what's going to happen with revenues from casinos. So stay tuned there. I think those were the major things we wanted to talk about at our meeting, and I've got some resolutions. Glad to answer any questions.
Dan.
Mike, you may not be able to answer this, but does anyone think about whether the bid came in high partly due to the steel tariffs that were imposed?
Due to what?
Steel tariffs.
That didn't come up. I don't know how much steel is in these buildings. I think they're probably not a lot of steel. They're fairly low buildings, two-story, look a little like townhouses almost, that kind of thing.
Thanks.
So I'm guessing that's not a big issue. I just think there's been so much work. They only got two bids on the general contractors. One was out of Binghamton and one was out of Syracuse. And I just think that there's a lot of work right now. If anybody's walked around the Commons lately and seen how many cranes are up, I think we can see in our area, plus there's a shortage of some of the labor that they need. So,
thanks.
Deborah.
I don't know who can answer this question, but if Coeur County doesn't have a county executive or a county administrator, and it now doesn't have a treasurer, how does it spend money?
That it runs through their departments and department heads, and there's acting positions. The county chair is an acting position for budgeting.
No thanks. I was going to ask the same kind of question. Henry, did you have your hand up? Anna.
Thank you so much. That was a very helpful report. I'm wondering if the discussion was that the timing was an issue with respect to the child care facility. Has there been discussion about reopening the bid to see if leaving this particular building development season might lead to more bids the next time around, or is it simply that they're going to try and raise more money or cut some of the project?
I think all of the above they're looking at. In fact, they talked about if they had to redesign it, for example, would it then be possible to have it come on up to bid, say, in January, where it would be early and people would be, or contractors would be trying to get the work for the season. So that, I think the answer is yes, that's one of the things being thought about.
And the other question I had was the 2.5 from the state, does that have a window in which that will no longer be available?
I'm not sure. Although I know we mentioned it to Senator Seward at the meeting that Martha scheduled, and he was already aware of it. So some of that money came from his efforts and Barbara Lifton's efforts.
So they're on it.
Okay. Rich John.
Mike, can you tell us again, what's the shortfall? The differential between?
$1 million.
$1 million.
So it's 25% over the budget.
Right.
Yeah. I do remember in, you know, the 2009 and 10, when people were looking for work, we were getting great bids on things, you know. All right, any other questions for Mike? All right, your resolutions, Mike?
Resolution C is adjustments to the 2018 budget municipal sales tax distribution agreement. That's ID 7633, and I move it.
Seconded by Dan. Any discussion?
I just want to say that this is the cleanup resolution. Rick will tell us that every year we have to do this to when we get the final sales tax figures, and which we have allocated between the city and the county.
All right, ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Resolution D, ratification of the bargaining agreement by and between the County of Tompkins and the Civil Service Employees Association, Inc., Local 1000 AFSCME, AFL-CIO, Tompkins County Local 855, Tompkins County White Collar Unit 8900, CSEA, ID number 7683, and I so move.
Leslin seconds. Short form or long roll call?
Short form.
Short. Is there any discussion?
Let me just say that I want to praise our bargaining units, our bargaining committees, both for management and for the labor folks. I think they came to a good conclusion here, and I think it was supported pretty well by the vote of the labor unit here.
Yes, thanks to everybody involved. These are long hours of meetings, and it's good to see these things come to us when they're all done. We need a short form roll call.
Ms. Callis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Good.
And then with it, we have Resolution E, establishing salaries for positions designated as management and authorizing the transfer of funds for salary adjustments. And I so move.
Seconded by Leslin. Discussion? Is this a roll call? Okay.
Ms. Callis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Any no's? Thank you. That's unanimous. And your new one, Mike, added to the agenda.
Oh, yes, I forgot. Resolution in support of including the Internet Fairness Conformity Act in the 2018 New York State budget. That's Resolution J. I so move.
Seconded by Anna. Discussion?
I will say there was a discussion at the very quick budget meeting we had before this. Some folks... I don't think anybody objected to it, other thinking maybe it was a little long, but I know when it was put together, the effort here was to try to mimic the positions that New York State Association of Counties has put forward.
Anyone else? And I would point out that, as I said before, our two senators and Barbara Lift, Assemblywoman Lifton, are in favor of this. We hope that the Senate is, I know the Assembly has come out for it. Hope the Senate might be convinced as well. Any other discussion?
I just mentioned that Rick told us at the meeting that he'd received word that several counties have written letters in support of this.
Good. Anna?
Two things. One, Mike, thank you so much for bringing this forward. This is really important. And do we have a sense of how many other counties have passed this so far?
Rick, do you know that or Jason?
For my treasurer's group, which I belong to, an email listserv, nearly all are in support of it. I've only seen letters from five, and there was a day planned in Albany, I think it was last week. I could not attend.
Lobbying day, yeah.
There was a lobby day that was sponsored by one of the counties there, and they were going to meet with certain legislators and talk about this. And I know a good number of treasurers throughout the state had made plans to go to that. I could not attend. So it's receiving pretty strong support from not just NYSAC, but from directors of finance and treasurers across the state.
Do we have any word from senators that have been, that their feedback, any opposition, reasons for any opposition?
I know you talked to Art.
We were told at NYSAC that it's basically just seen as a new tax, which really isn't true. It's just
an uncollected tax.
Making sure we collect an existing tax. Jason, did you want to add to that?
I just think, I don't think the Senate budget version had it in there, but I think the Assembly and the executive budget did have it in there.
Right. Deborah.
I was just going to add that when we talked to Senator O'Meara, he said he personally was in favor of it, yeah, but his conference wasn't, because they just don't like taxes.
Except that it already exists.
Yeah.
Right. Do we, Rick, do you have any way to guess how, you know, if this passes, what we might see from it? No way to know.
I don't have that in front of me. I know there were some numbers thrown out there, and I know that there was percentages thrown out there. I'm trying to think.
In the memo here, it says the state estimates that nearly $160 million of new revenue would be collected annually by enactment of this provision. Of course, that would be statewide.
I believe NYSAC's numbers said that it would be $140 million for municipalities and $140 million, you know, equal amount for the state. That's what I believe I remember reading from NYSAC.
That'd mean a lot. That's
great. It'd be about okay. Significant.
Yeah. This really was one of NYSAC's top advocacy issues when, you know, coming out of our legislative conference. So anything else? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. And again, thank you, Mike, for bringing this forward on short notice. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks to Rick for alerting us here, too.
Great. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean, Claiborne Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will meet next Wednesday, March 28, 3:30, in the Old Jail Conference Room. The Vice Chair of the Committee, Anna Kellis, will be chairing that meeting. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much, Leslyn. For the Housing Committee, we met yesterday, which is convenient because then I remember what we said. So it was the day before. Anyway, our next meeting is April 16th, Monday at 3 o'clock in this room. We had a sort of information-rich meeting with first Norma Jane from the Ithaca Board of Realtors, showing us there's a Realtors Property Resource Database that they are offering this to us to do some data analytics for us, and she sort of showed us what's available to try to get our, you know, some ideas of what would be useful for us. So that was really very interesting and helpful. We had Joe Bowes, Lynn Truaim, and Delia Yarrow from INHS come and talk about the INHS Housing Trust, which has been in operation about 8 or 9 years. Really interesting to hear the progress they've made. They have sold 53 units so far during that time period, and in the city and town of Ithaca. So far, only this, if you remember, a year or so ago, we had to pass and really had to lobby hard to get the state to change the taxing base for these homes, because the land is owned by Ithaca Neighborhood Housing. The buyers also, they have to be income qualified, and then they agree within the in the purchase agreement, they agree that there will not be any more than a 2% increase in the value of the house over the time that they own it, so that they'll get a little bit of appreciation when if they sell it.
2% a year.
2% a year. I didn't say.
No.
I didn't say that. Okay. 2% a year appreciation. So they'll get a little bit, but it'll still remain relatively affordable long term. But the subsidy to make it work is about $100,000 a unit. So it's like there's no free lunch here. So, but it was really good to talk with them, and we are thinking that that might be a way that the county might be able to support home ownership at affordable levels, if we can do something there. We also heard from Nels Bone from the IURA and Heather McDaniel from the IDA about their efforts to crunch numbers and try to understand what the IDA might be able to do, what kind of incentive might be required for a developer to be able to add 10 or 20% of their units as affordable units. So we looked at that, a couple of spreadsheets, and also quite expensive to do that, to really make apartments affordable. And the idea can only do rentals, not ownership housing. We heard from Tierra Labrada from the Human Services Coalition. She manages the continuum of care. And basically the question to her was, if you had, $3 million from, say, the housing, a housing capital reserve fund, where should the county focus? So we had a pretty compelling presentation of why we need to focus on the absolutely most vulnerable in our community, chronically homeless, people with mental health or substance abuse issues, very low-income folks. And so we talked quite a bit about what might be reasonable and effective with that population. It seems like for that population, there's a lot of staffing, sort of ongoing support that's needed beyond. It's not just, we need new supply, but that's not enough for a lot of the most vulnerable populations. You really need sustainable ongoing funding as well. Then also heard from Megan McDonald about the Community Housing Development Fund and the lineup of projects that she's seeing in the pipeline. Looks like we could see $2 million worth of requests, but for 2018, we only have $200,000 left from the Cornell Fund. We've spent down the city and county monies already. So there's just a lot of need and many different ways to go. So Jason wrapped up our meeting by saying that he wants to sort of sit down with Megan and Katie Borghella, I might be invited to really kind of map out, just look at all the range of possibilities. What are the short, middle, and long-term things that we can do? What are the low-cost, medium, and high-cost things we can do? Try to develop some kind of a strategy. And Megan mentioned that the planning department's searches, they've got several searches going on. Those are progressing so that we believe we'll have the housing planner in place maybe by May. So we're hoping that that'll really make a difference too. So obviously that person needs to be brought in and really help to shape the program for us going forward. So a lot of information and more to go. Anna.
I just wanted to thank you for bringing this together. You've been talking about this $3 million. We haven't had anything secure, any real clear sense of it. And so I think a lot of us, it's been kind of fuzzy, this was the first time we got to hear from the people on the ground who are already doing great things that are already successful and showcasing for us things that we could do that would address what Mike Sigler has been saying all the time, which is I'm fine with this as long as it actually creates the housing I'm looking for and not just more talk and more, which I really appreciated. This was consistent. We have pages of documentation. I would look, anybody who wants to see it. We should trust the people who are already successfully doing it. And if we want to address and fix some of these things, we got some great recommendations. One thing I would just add is Tierra Labrada gave us like a 4-page document of you want to give us some money and you want to get something right away. Here's like 15 things that we could do with this right away. So I appreciated that, and that might be something worth distributing.
So thanks, Anna. Yeah, and it's and also to remember that we have ongoing fund, we have target funding, and we have one-time funding, whether it's a capital reserve fund or whatever. So there are different kinds of needs for different kinds of results. One thing that was mentioned was bus passes. That as much as people, a lot of folks are getting sort of pushed out farther and farther from their jobs. At least if we could provide more bus passes, that could help at least on the margins. I see Dan writing that down. Yes? Yay! Any questions on that? All right. Thank you very much. April 16th, our next meeting. Housing Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. The Public Safety Committee will be meeting on April 4th at 3 o'clock here. And let me just say, I believe we're going to have a presentation by OAR. on the status of their programs, including the College Initiative Upstate and the Endeavor House. I have a couple resolutions. First is Resolution F, appropriation from contingent fund, replacement pay, reimbursement, Sheriff's Office, and I would move it.
Seconded by Shauna. Discussion? Short form roll call.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you.
And I have Resolution G, resolution to support the initiative to develop a LEAD law enforcement assisted diversion program in collaboration with the city and community representatives and to authorize the county administrator to execute the memorandum of understanding. And I would move it. And the Public Safety Committee met just before the meeting and did pass this. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you. Seconded by Anna. Discussion. Well, there's nothing to discuss, Bill. There's been a lot of meetings on this. Mike.
No, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask what the sheriff's take was on.
I believe the sheriff supports. He was at the meeting where we had the community meeting with the community representatives, city and the county, and he voted in favor.
Thank you.
Leslin and then Anna.
Have Anna go. I'm trying to find my notes.
No, I just wanted to say he was there today, actually, and he's just looking forward to getting it going, at least in the conversations that I've had with him. So the next steps would be setting up the operations committee and the community leadership committee. So thank you for working on this and taking a seat on it, and I'm so excited to see this move forward. So thanks.
Les?
All right, I still don't find my notes, but I'm... Rich, maybe for the purposes of the viewing public who are not at Big Hunger, you can explain what this means.
I think that's a really good idea. If you can bear with me for a couple minutes, I think I can do it. LEAD is really a change in the way the police agencies are going to approach policing, in that they're faced with essentially a binary choice in many circumstances now of... if there's a crime, they arrest. And this is going to give them a choice to divert the person under certain circumstances, and that's what the next steps in LEAD are to do, is the operations work group will propose these are the criminal offenses where LEAD would apply. And there are certain exclusions, say, for violent crimes, for serious drug offenses, for... sexual assault crimes, but essentially it's addressing the repetitive low-level criminal offenses that you see end up putting people into the criminal justice system and the jail, and instead trying to connect them directly to services. There's heavy supervision of the people who go into LEAD to make sure that they are... getting the counseling that is a condition of going through LEAD, and that the services are made available to them, whether that's housing assistance, whether it's mental health care, drug treatment, whatever it's seen as the particular needs for that individual that are leading them to the criminal behavior. And so I, my personal opinion, this is a really positive development, and certainly if we're trying to look at it in the context of our overall jail population and what we want to try to do about recidivism. The idea is to take people out of the criminal justice system and to put them on better pathways, if we can. It's a person-by-person approach.
Some more, go ahead, Leslie.
Can I ask a follow-up just about the memo of understanding? Is that what it says? Good Lord. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean for us as a county in terms of our role? Is all the other partners, the city and whomever else, also signing a memo of understanding?
Yes, all of the participants on the policy group are signing. We have from the county, if I can recall, it's assigned counsel, it's the county administrator, it's the legislature, it's the district attorney, and the sheriff. Right now it's getting rolled out in the city first, and it will be expanded once, presumably it'll be expanded once we can show that it's working. and it would be adopted by the sheriff. But the county is going to be participating immediately because most of the underlying services that people will be referred to are county services.
Thank you. Thank you. Anna?
Just a couple things. I appreciate, Rich, that you mentioned specifically addressing recidivism. So the statistics on LEAD programs specifically is that it has, for Albany, for example, a 68% reduction in recidivism when they added their LEAD program. It's not easy to set up, and I think that that's important because it's messy. It's democratic in that it is giving a balance to community members who have a voice, people in the trenches who are working in the field have a voice, and the government policy group, and they work together to make this happen. The other thing that is really important for people to know who might be watching is that this is a harm reduction model, which means that it is customized and meets the person where they are to help empower them with a sense of dignity to where they need to go to create the healthy lifestyle that they identify collectively with the case manager that they're working with. That is extremely important. The other thing is that there's a community leadership team group that will help in setting up the criteria, and that's also a unique part of this, that they'll get feedback from the community, feed into the continued working of this, that may ultimately change over time some of the eligibility requirements. So it really is a give and take and a conversation. The last thing that I wanted to say is that unlike other cities, the other counties or municipalities that have done this, the community has not had representation on the policy committee. We as a collective group created a policy committee that does have representation from, for example, community leaders of color, as well as a representative from the community leadership team to sit on that board. So we're unique in that way, and it creates a very active dialogue that I think is important.
And I want to thank Shauna and Henry as well for being part of those meetings, lots and lots of meetings and conversation. And I think this is a terrific big step. And I just want to say I just went to the Tompkins County Sheriff's Office website where we now have a new tab that says jail statistics. You can find out how many people are boarded out every day. Today we have 67 inmates in-house, 11 boarded out. So every one of those 11, that's one of our benchmarks that we're going to follow. And I want to thank ITS and the Sheriff's Department for putting that tab on there. But it's something you can check every day, see how we're doing. Anything else on LEAD?
I think we just need to vote.
We need to vote. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's very unanimous. Thank you very much. A lot of great work done. Thank you. And is that it, Rich?
Unless anybody has any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Our HHS committee meeting was March 12th, where we covered the topic of senior housing and care options in the county. We were given a presentation by Lisa Holmes, Director of Office of Aging with the county. We also had representatives from Titus Towers, Visiting Nurse Services, and Longview. The meeting started conversation into our future needs for senior housing. We also discussed Medicaid-assisted living beds in our county and the county goal to provide such an option for constituents. Our next Health and Human Services meeting will take place Monday, April 9th at 4 p.m.
Thank you, Shauna. Any questions? Very good. Dave McKenna, Facilities and Infrastructure Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. F and I met Thursday, March 15th, and I guess I have one resolution, authorization to execute construction funding agreement with New York State DOT for County Route 119, Cottington Road, Highway Safety Improvements at Burns Road and East King Road intersections, Town of Ithaca. And that's document ID 7677, and I so move.
Seconded by Deborah. Any discussion? This one's been a long time in the works, too.
Yeah, it's been a couple of years.
Okay. All right, ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
And in addition to that, we had had an action item which authorized seek construction bids for the same project. And that looking for an ID number 7678, and that was a committee only thing, and that was passed. And we also had a resolution for audit of final payment for. And I'll kill this name, Marchuska Brothers Construction LLC, Tompkins County Public Library, 21st Century Renovations, Phase 2 Project, ID 7688, and that was also passed. In addition to that, I'm going to turn my hat around and do Mayor Services Board thing. One of the most significant things that came out of it was that there will be a meeting at the CFR building on April 5th with Cornell to talk about non-pipe alternatives for part of the research park area and see if anything happens with that, see if Cornell's interested in going in on that to get a larger group of buildings and more square footage. So.
Dave, I think you're fading out a couple of people. The last sentence or two again.
Yeah, okay. The date of that meeting, Dave.
April 5th.
April 5th, when, where?
CFR building at the airport.
What time?
It's noon.
And what is it for?
Sorry.
Yeah, it's to talk about non-pipe alternatives, see if we can talk Cornell into joining in to the non-pipe alternative thing.
Thank you.
And try to get more square footage so we can free up more gas to possibly support new business in the area.
Thank you, Dave. Anna, and then Deborah.
Is that also including conversations? I mean, you say it's at the airport. Conversations, joint ventures between the airport and the park and the tech park, business park. I mean, like. Ground source.
Yeah, it's all a ground source heat pump thing, but it's whether it would be in combination or individual, I'm not sure, but the idea is to free up more gas in the area.
But that's one of the main points of conversation.
That's correct.
Great.
That's correct.
Deborah?
That was my question.
Okay, yeah.
Basically.
Jason, Ann, Arell, and myself are still working on a space study, and it's not ready for prime time yet, so I'll just leave that open. And that's my report. Thank you very much.
All right. Any other questions for Dave? All right. Thank you very much. Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein. And by the way, we're just a tad past transportation. I'm sorry. We're a tad past 7:30. Let's say we go through without having a break and... just keep going. All right. Transportation Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
The Transportation Committee did not meet since our last meeting of the legislature. We will be meeting again on April 6th at 9 o'clock here. I'll take just a second, if I could, to report on the ITCTC, the Ithaca-Tompkins County Transportation Council, which I'm the representative to, which is actually two parts. There's the council itself. There's also a planning committee part of that. And I attended that meeting today because I was kind of interested in what they were doing. Heard a couple of reports from the DOT in Syracuse from the region. Mark Fichette was there and mentioned that the Bridge New York program Tompkins will have an allocation under that of two bridges this year. And I don't mean Tompkins County government, but the Tompkins County geography will have that allocation along with six culvert projects. So last year, as you recall, two bridges were given to the town of Dryden in the project. The The date for submitting culvert projects apparently has now passed, but that the date for the bridge projects has not. This is the federal Bridge New York money. Apparently the city is planning to put in a request for a bridge as part of this. I wanted folks to know about that. Also, there was discussion about a bike share alternative, or I say alternative bike share initiative that's going to be announced, I think, by the city later this week. I don't want to step on their toes on it, but there is copies of the handout in your boxes if you'd like to look at that.
Mike, are you saying that within the county there will be another two bridges and some culverts funded through Bridge New York this year?
This is the second round.
Second round.
Yep.
Okay, that's great. Any questions for Mike? All right, thank you, Mike. Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein, Chair.
Thank you. We have not met since the last legislature meeting. Our next meeting is on Thursday, April 5th, I think, 9:30 a.m. And the one thing I'll mention that I know we'll be talking about is the county website. The website we have now went live in 2012, and there's a lot of discussion that it needs some kind of reworking at some level. We're not sure what that is. So we're going to start that conversation. It's going to be a big conversation. We're not going to go too far into it. My goal is to see if we have consensus that something needs to be done and try to get a ballpark figure on what that dollar cost is going to be to fix that, to make those fixes, and to incorporate that in the budget at the earliest possible time so that it can be worked on in 2019 and goes live in 2020.
Thank you, Dan. Any questions? Ann.
I'm just wondering, is Marcia Lynch in that committee?
Yes.
Okay.
Leslie?
So I'm not sure who the City of Ithaca uses, if it's the same vendor, but if you all are looking at probably new folks or new stuff, maybe this could be a two-for-one. I know the city is doing some work as well, so you might want to check that out. Let's see if we can get the vendor to, you know, who knows.
Thank you.
Deborah?
Yeah.
Leslie, I believe that their vendor is problematic because anything you put on their platform is considered proprietary. And if you then sever your relationship with them, you have to start all over from ground zero.
They might want to join our vendor. I don't know. Whatever the conversation could be. Maybe, we could get a discount or something. I don't know.
A group rate.
Group rate.
Dan, I wonder if...
it's government. One big government.
If there's consensus that, you know, we should move ahead with this, there might, you know, there's the vehicle of funding from the contingent fund, right, Rick? Okay. The idea of trying to get it started sooner than 2019.
We can definitely consider that. It's going to be a big conversation. I've already had small conversations, enough to know that it's going to be a big conversation about what we're actually going to do. My guess is, my instinct is that conversation is going to take 4 or 5 months.
Oh, here comes
Marcia. And Jason, did you want to say?
Greg Potter's got to be part of that conversation.
Yeah.
One thing to give you a slight update, and I already mentioned this to Dan. Greg Potter, Director of ITS, and I have spoken about this, and we're going to have a proposal and so forth to present to GEO at its April meeting. Okay?
Sounds good.
On short term and getting more insight into what the issues are at this point. So stay tuned.
Great. That sounds terrific. Pleased to hear it. Any other questions for Dan? All right. Thank you very much. Good to hear. Do we have, can I get a motion on the minutes of, what? You're right. There aren't any minutes. What? We'll have two sets. I guess that's what happens when Kathy Covert is on vacation. All right. Anna? What?
Just moving it.
Moving. There aren't any minutes.
No minutes. I was like, what are you all moving? I was looking at
No, is there? I mean, like, okay. We'll give you permission to pass whatever you put in front of us proactively. All right. Can I get a motion to adjourn? That would be Deborah. That would be a unanimous second. Seconded by Amanda. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you all.
400 voters in Trumansburg, last I heard.
400 voters in Trumansburg. All right, go vote.